7, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Good morning, Todd. How are you today?
Good morning, John. Doing just fine.
I'm glad you see everybody's well. Both of us are well. Greg is off someplace again. And we have an exciting show today with a very disturbing event in D.C. that we'll go over everything that we know about it so far. We have a couple other events that just recently occurred. One is there's been some cracks found in some 737s. They call it a bear claw, but it's a piece of structure right around the door of the airplane. It's critical. And they found some cracks in them. And there's a mandatory inspection out now for all of the 737s to look at that. And we also have another event involving an Airbus over London. Now, Airbus is basically a computer-driven airplane. And this appears to be a computer glitch with some of their navigation, and the British authorities are taking a good hard look at that airplane to try to figure out.
But before we get into that, we'd like to tell you a little bit about our sponsor, Avemco Insurance. When you call Avemco, you speak directly with an aviation underwriter, not an agent, not a broker. Whether you're buying an airplane, renewing coverage, or just exploring your options, Avemco is there for you. Call them at 888-879-0389 or visit www.avemco.com/flightsafety for a free quote. Tell them the Flight Safety Detective sent you, and you get a 5% discount.
All right. So as I said a moment ago about the 737 inspections, they found some cracks around the small door in the right front of the airplane. We call it the galley service door. It's not as big as the main entrance door, but they found some cracks in some airplanes, and it's concerning enough that the FAA has issued a airworthiness directive, which is the highest level of mandatory inspection that the FAA has, and to require them to look at a number of their airplanes. In fact, it's the 737-8 and 737-9 and the 737-8200, three different versions of the 737. To check the cracking in that area. So it's enough of a concern that they issued an AD note, airworthiness directive, which will focus the attention of maintenance personnel right in that area to see if they have the similar problems. And the other thing that we just mentioned was that Airbus over London that had stall warning. Now, stall warning is a real attention getter when you get it on an airplane, any airplane, small, big, doesn't matter. To have two stall warnings for an airliner in flight had to be very concerning for the crew. Sometimes those concerns can lead to overactions. I would expect that it didn't. But there is going to be an in-depth investigation around this airplane to try to determine why a perfectly good airplane flying along had two indications of stall warning. You know, one is concerning. Two of them is going to get everybody's attention. So the British authorities will be digging into that as well. And the third one, which is really, really concerning to me, is another close call, apparently, in between a helicopter and an airplane at DCA. Now, one would think after what all that just went through, all the noise that the NTSB has made, the chairman just recently was chiding Congress because there's two bills in the legislative hopper to address the issues around Washington National and air traffic control, and the one's in the House and one's in the Senate, and she's hoping to get one of them out of the past and become law so they can work on the problems. But I mean, this is concerning. Even if it was just a momentary lapse that got the helicopter close to the airplane, it is of concern. So you did a deep dive on this, Todd. Why don't you share with our audience what we have?
Well, of course, we're speaking about not just any helicopter, but Marine One, which is the designation of the helicopter that has the president on board. This took place on August 4th on Tuesday afternoon, fairly clear day in DC. So, fortunately, visibility wasn't a problem. And unlike what happened about a year and a half ago, this was clearly a daytime event. But as you can see from the video clip that we have, there is a regional jet, I believe, was an American Airlines Envoy Airlines aircraft taking off at about 2:30. You see it rising out of the screen, and a few seconds later, from the left side of the screen, you see the classic Marine One helicopter coming across. It turns out there were two helicopters, but here's what's important: even though there was plenty of separation, you don't have to be an expert to tell from the video. We also have an overhead shot of the ground track of that regional jet after it took off. And as you can see, it was over on the Virginia side of the Potomac and flew very close to the Pentagon and Arlington National Cemetery. And the Marine One aircraft was apparently on the far side of the Potomac on the DC side. So there was no immediate chance of a collision. Plus, the regional jet had climbed to about 2,000 feet by the time it reached the Pentagon, whereas Marine One, as you can see from that previous clip, was roughly several hundred feet above the ground. And I say roughly because, unlike every commercial airliner in the DC area that's flying, Marine One doesn't have ADS-B broadcasting. You might recall from the show that we did some time ago about the mid-air collision with the Army helicopter and the regional jet airliner. The Army helicopter was transmitting ADS-B. But again, when the president's on board, for a whole bunch of reasons we're not going to go into, that sort of detail is not available. And there's a process in place, part of which is there should be 3 minutes of space for Marine One. That is, the Reagan National Tower is, or the authorities at Reagan are informed that Marine One's about to fly. Flights are stopped from taking off, and you have clear airspace for the president to fly on by. There were actually two helicopters, minimum of two, that were flying by. The second one was some seconds, let's say 15 seconds or so behind the first. Which one was the president on? It's unlikely we'll ever know that because typically, when the president travels in Marine One, there's at least one and possibly two decoy helicopters that are also flying. Again, for security's sake, to keep them guessing, as it were. But in any case, whether or not the president was in the first or in the second aircraft, that jet shouldn't have been taking off. Now, there will be an investigation. It's unclear to me whether that investigation, be it the NTSB or another organization, will have a lot of public display of information. We may might not know much about it. However, because of the preponderance of cameras every type all over the DC area, and because of the use of ADS-B, we have a fairly good idea that yes, they were both in the air at the same time. No, they weren't close to running into each other. And yes, they apparently violated some of the safety procedures that should have been in place for this kind of operation. Now, I'm going to take it over to you, John, for a minute, because you have had experience seeing this up close and personal. From your days at the NTSB, looking out your window, you could see these aircraft flying by, Marine One, jets coming out of Reagan. And just tell us from your perspective, from your memory, how busy is this airspace?
Well, Washington National for the commercial operation is extremely busy. And certain times of the day, it's actually unbelievably busy. And the helicopter traffic up and down the river is also very, very busy. Now the Marine one, there's three helicopters typically, all identical, that fly up and down the river with or without the president. So they, it's an attempt to keep anybody who wants to shoot down one of those helicopters guessing on which one the president is on, if he's even on any of them. It's never broadcast. Like you said, there's no ADS-B, so you can't plan on intercepting them at certain points. They're pretty much autonomous, their traffic up and down. Now, from my office at the NTSB headquarters, my view was down the river. So I would see them when I was sitting there, even on the computer. My computer faced the window. So if I was sitting on it, all I have to do is raise my eyes up and I was looking down the river. So I would see those helicopters coming and going constantly all day long. Not only the Marine one, the three of them coming up and down, but a whole host of other helicopters coming up and down, heading to the Pentagon, at least. I don't know where all they were going. But it was pretty busy with helicopters. So, and they always stayed from me looking out of my window in DC down the river. They were on the left side, which was the Maryland side of the river. So they always hugged the river on the left side. They weren't very far over the land, and they weren't very far over the water. So they tried to, a straight line, but the coast wasn't straight. So they were drifting in and out of the water and the shoreline as they headed south to the bridge, and then they were off on their own. I don't know where they went from there. Right, but like I said, I'll tell you what, if I didn't see 30 helicopters a day, I didn't see any. They were up constantly, back and forth, back and forth. And given the Washington traffic and people trying to get to the Andrews Air Force Base, among other places, I mean, you would spend half a day. At 3 o'clock, you would spend a couple of hours trying to get to Andrews Air Force Base on the road. So you can understand why they were interested in having the helicopters ferry some of the military people that have things to do. So it's understandable, but it's risky, as we found with that airplane at night. Fortunately, this was during the day. There's a lot of events occurring around that time, so. It's a challenge for air traffic control, a challenge for the military pilots, and need to be on their game in a major way. So fortunately they caught with this one. Initially I heard it was a momentary incursion. Now it doesn't appear that it was incursion at all. We don't know. The data will come out eventually, but the concerns of the NTSB right on the top of the table. We have those two conflicting bills, one in the House, one in the Senate. They need to get something out so that there's resources to deal with the issues. It's one thing to recognize the issue. It's one thing to put a Band-Aid on it like they have to try to deal with it. But we need to have the resources and the authority, not we, but the NTSB and the FAA needs to have the resources and the authority to make the changes that are necessary.
And in this particular incident, there are several questions that come up, which may or may not be answered by the investigation, depending on how public that is. But one of the basic ones is, who was talking to whom? Did you have the same controller talking to the Marine One crew and to the airliner, or were there two different controllers talking to two different aircraft? And if so, was there communication going back and forth between these two so they knew what was happening? Did they have a situational awareness of what was happening around them?
Hello, aviation enthusiasts, safety professionals, and curious minds. Welcome to Flight Safety Detectives. We are thrilled that you dropped by. Here, we dive deep into the world of aviation safety. From incident investigations and technical analysis to
lessons learned, and what they mean for safer skies. As a member of our channel, you get exclusive member-only perks, first access to new episodes, live stream discussions, and Q&A sessions. We are a community of fellow safety detectives who love aviation as much as you do. If you're passionate about aviation or just curious about how things work, we'd love to have you on board. Hit join, ring the bell to be notified, and jump into the discussions in the comments. Strap in, because together we're going to explore aviation safety like never before.
And beyond that, an even more basic question, which I already know the answer to, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Well, gee, you know, Washington now has two other major airports, and Washington National is, although it's centrally located, it's in a very sensitive place. It's within, I don't know, what, a couple of miles of the Pentagon, the Capitol Building, White House, Washington Monument, all sorts of things which, even if there's an accident, it could potentially be catastrophic, not just for the people on board, but to the national symbols. I mean, one just has to go back to the case in 82 with the Air Florida Flight 90 that crashed into the 14th Street Bridge, not too far from the Pentagon. Why don't they just move the airport and close it down?
You know, I'm old enough to remember when they, and I lived down there, when they passed the bill to build Dulles Airport from scratch. There was no airport out there. There was no little airport that they expanded. They bought a whole bunch of farmland out there to build that international airport. And part of the original plan had for Washington National to close. But you hit the nail on the head. It's within a few miles of all those, the Pentagon, all the government high-level executive offices, and most important, it's within a few miles of the House and the Senate members. And they decided that they didn't want Washington National closed because it's just too convenient. You know, in fact, when they put restrictions, when Dulles opened, they put restrictions on National to 50, I think it was 1,500 miles. Whatever the number was, you couldn't fly long distance flights out of there. Well, that lasted a while, but slowly but surely, we got several flights to the West Coast allowed. You know, committee chairman made, one of the committee chairmen was Phoenix, and suddenly they had a nonstop from Washington National to Phoenix. We had, I remember, TWA flew the Washington National to LA flight. I forget the rest of them. But slowly but surely, they allowed longer flights out of Washington National for the convenience of our government officials.
Gosh, it just brings to mind the fact that Washington State, where I lived for 20 years, has two powerful, longstanding senators. And in the last few years, I do recall at least a couple of flights, either a day or per week, nonstop from the Seattle area, from Seattle to D.C. Even if Washington National wasn't there, you have another very large user of airspace, that is the military. You have the Pentagon, the headquarters of the entire national defense establishment, which has tens of thousands of people working there, many 3- and 4-star generals flying in and out on helicopters, not to mention flights going out of Andrews and commercial flights to support the military operations in and around D.C. Even without National, this would be a heck of an airspace with a whole lot of traffic going on. So what we'll have to give before something changes?
Well, we will keep our eye on this and watch for what comes out of it in the future. You know, we have a lot of, you mentioned some of the unanswered questions that we have, and hopefully that they will be disclosed in the public and not private because it is involving the president's airplanes. So there are reasons to keep that out of the public's eye, but we'll see what comes out of this later, and we'll keep all our audience informed.
And speaking of our audience, we don't want to leave them hanging. We did promise them some details on a couple of other issues here, and one of which I'm interested in because when I read about the bear strap incident with the 737. Even though I worked at Boeing, even though I worked on the development of the 777, I had no idea what the heck a bear strap was.
It's a very complicated piece of structure, I'll tell you that. It's way too deep to be talking about here, but it really carries a lot of stress in the airplane. I don't know how many people realize that the doors on the airplane, any cutouts, are very, very stressful on the airplane. Those of our people that remember way back in the late 50s, we've lost the several Concorde airplanes, Comets, excuse me, Comet airplanes. British built first jetliner passenger service had square windows, and the pressurization cracked the airplane at the windows, in the corner of the windows, and we lost several airplanes because of it before we finally, they were lost over the ocean until we finally had one showed up with cracks that we could figure out what happened, and they solved the problem. That's why all the windows are oval on airplanes. They're no longer square because it takes a lot of structure. In that area, just when the air from the nose of the airplane, as the nose of the airplane expands up to the diameter of the tube, is one of the areas of maximum stress on the airplane. And that's where we have all sorts of very robust structural devices to keep the nose attached to the airplane, keep the doors in place on the airplanes. So that's where this bear paw, because it's spread out like to capture a whole bunch of different pieces of the airplane. And that's where we use it to pull the airplane together, to hold it together. So that's a basic, it goes a lot deeper than what I said, but just basically it's an attach point that holds different pieces of the airplane together, and not necessarily big pieces either. So we'll report more of it. Maybe we'll work on that. We'll get Mike Borfris on, and we can have a detailed discussion into what a bear strap does and how it's manufactured and so on. It's quite a complicated piece of hardware on an airplane.
And the other one that you mentioned earlier that you would say a little bit more on, which got my attention, was about the Airbus with a, let's say, a computer issue that happened over London. Anytime you say happening over London, automatically my ears perk up. It's like, oh my gosh, what's the worst that could happen if this unit had actually failed or caused them severe difficulty in controlling the aircraft over the city of London?
Well, stall warning means that the airplane is, your wings are not going to hold the airplane up. You're approaching the point where you're going to fall out of the sky. And there's all kinds of bells and whistles in the cockpit to alert the pilot of that condition. So you can imagine a pilot's flying over London. He was going to be landing in London. So he's paying attention to his landing procedures and listening to air traffic control to be slotted in to the flow so he can land the airplane. And then to all of a sudden have stall warning. I mean, he's got to be looking around like crazy trying to figure out what's going on. Does he have the airspeed that he needs? Did he get a wind shear or a gust of tailwind that wasn't expected? I mean, there's all sorts of things that would set it off. But so he's got to be looking around. He may have silence one and then to have it come back a second time, and the level of concern with that second one has got to be sky high. Sky high, because it's unknown. Because he's already, after the first one, he's already gone through the whole system. And to have it come back again, it's got to be really concerning for a pilot. And you can't have his attention diverted when you're in a landing sequence. I mean, London's not a remote airport. It's a busy airspace. You got three major airports right around the city. You got traffic whichever direction you go. And so he can't just willy-nilly break out of the traffic pattern to take 2 minutes to go figure out what's going on. He's got to be communicating with the tower. He's got to be trying to figure out what's going on. And he's got to continue to fly the airplane. So he was busy.
I have never flown a large aircraft like that, but I have flown smaller aircraft. And I remember back in the 70s when I was learning how to fly, it was fairly normal to have a lot of practice with stalls and even spins and recovering from both. And for the aircraft I was flying, a Cessna 172 and Cessna 152, it was fairly benign. You had a warning horn and you had buffeting, and you would have the controls kind of getting mushy in your hands because these were all mechanical controls. So there's plenty of warning in front of a stall, and the recovery was fairly simple. Large jet aircraft, is recovery as obvious as in my Cessna, and is the warning signs as obvious as you would see in a Cessna?
No, it's not as easy to identify. And one simple accident where everybody was lost was involving a stall for a Airbus airplane over the Atlantic for an airplane coming out of Brazil. And he slowed down and slowed down, not even realizing it. So it's of concern. It's of concern. So we will keep you posted as more comes out of that, out of both of those, actually all three. I'm interested in the bear strap just because of my background. I'm interested in the Washington National because of my time at the NTSB and what's going on and possibly people in power not listening to the alarms that the NTSB is raising. And also the digital flight controls on Airbus and so many other airplanes today, because although Airbus led the parade to computerize their airplanes, today everybody is having more and more computers fly their airplanes. So anytime you get a glitch, especially stall warning glitches, that has my attention as well. So we'll be following up with all of that.
The second and last word for me is about the DC event, or rather the DC events. We had, unfortunately, a fatal event in early 2025 and a very public event just a few days before we did this broadcast, this podcast rather. And it calls into question different kinds of issues in the Washington, DC area. But both events have one thing in common: Washington National Airport. Will the Congress heed the measures being suggested by the NTSB? Will there be lessons learned from this apparently operational or procedural error that fortunately didn't lead to a disaster but should not have happened at all? Or will this be swept under the rug and business as usual? Time will tell.
And for the last word, I will go back to my standard plea with everybody. If you're going to go flying, please do a good job of pre-planning your flight. Do it at home or in the hotel. Do it at the airport. I had prepared for today's session an accident involving poor pre-planning, but these events are much more interesting. So we'll have to hold that accident for a later show. But pre-planning is so important. Your pre-flight is also very, very important. Don't forget to touch your airplane. When you do your walk around, learn to wiggle the flight controls. It won't take long before you realize what's normal, and you'll be easily able to identify discrepancies in the system.
Get started.
Do a good pre-flight, both inside and outside the airplane. And when you get in the air, please, please put that head on a swivel. There are a lot of students flying out there today, a lot of potential for mistakes. And we are our brother's keepers. So let's keep our eye on not only what we're doing, but what's going on around us. Situational awareness. And please, please fly safely.
Let me talk to the folks who have joined the Flight Safety Detectives, our members. We thank you very much for doing so, and we're hoping that you are enjoying your membership and the benefits that come with that, including getting early access to new episodes and other goodies to be determined later. And if you're interested in becoming a member, you'll see a graphic on the screen with an arrow pointing to the join button on the YouTube channel. Join. Do what is necessary to become a member at whatever level you'd like and enjoy those benefits. And if you have questions, whether or not you're a member or not, write to us at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. And we're not leaving out sponsors. We love sponsors. We can always use more, and we hope that you can use our content to attract our audience to your product or service. Contact us at fsdsponsors@gmail.com. We'll have a conversation.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetodetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
For decades, Avemco Insurance Company has been an advocate for pilot safety by promoting and sponsoring continuous pilot training and education. One of their initiatives has been to reward pilots who actively participate in being more proficient with savings on their insurance premium through the Avemco Safety Rewards Program. Pilots save by earning new ratings, getting recurrent training, participating in the Fast Team Wing program, and listening to podcasts like ours and other Avemco-related courses and training. Call 888-879-0389 for a free quote or visit avemco.com/flightsafety. Don't forget to tell them the Flight Safety Detective sent you for an automatic 5% off.